Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, host of Locked On Warriors, here with David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat. And on today's show, we look ahead to what the Heat can do to bounce back in Game 4 against the Celtics. And if the Nuggets have one more comeback in them against the Lakers, then we end today's show by talking about the most interesting potential rebuilds this offseason. Let's go.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Despite the Miami Heat being able to come back and outscore every opponent in the second halves of these playoffs, Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, and Eric Spoelstra all recently expressed that they need to do better to begin games. And David, that's where I want to start today's show, because it's something that I thought after the Heat lost to the Celtics in Game 3, and specifically, I want to turn our attention to Jimmy Butler. And I get this whole thing that he can win games without scoring bunches of points, right? That's his brand. But eventually, the Heat are going to need him to score bunches of points, and I think to do so early if they are going to beat these Celtics. What do you think?
Oh, undoubtedly. And, look, if no other indication is necessary than the fact that late in the fourth quarter and what was slowly getting away from them, Eric Spoelstra chose to bench Jimmy Butler in favor of a offensive-minded unit that could get something going quickly. And I'm not sure, maybe we're kind of over-exaggerating the act of actually taking out your best player in a game that, again, was already seeing a double-digit deficit, and maybe you weren't going to find a way to claw anything back make it a more interesting game. But I think there are issues with Jimmy's performance. And look, he had a pretty solid series against the Indiana Pacers. He had a huge game one and a huge game three, fourth quarter against the Milwaukee Bucks. But other than that, he's been mostly pretty quiet. And I think this is something that we're starting to see much more. I've been pretty much banging this drum pretty consistently because I feel like he's had some nagging injuries during the regular season prior to even the hiatus that I don't think he's fully gone away from. Like, we keep expecting Jimmy to be this high energy guy who's going to go out there and, again, as you pointed out, do all these little things to make winning happen. But he also needs to shoulder a big part of the scoring load. That's just the way it is, especially when Boston's wing defenders, and they've done a phenomenal job of limiting guys like Goran Dragic. They've effectively shut down Miami's bench, which to me was a big strength of that unit moving into this series. And they need to get scoring from somebody. They've been getting it from Bam Adebayo, and that's not the strength of his game. So that's an interesting dichotomy to me, is that Bam has taken up this much bigger scoring load, scoring 27 points in the loss on Saturday. And Jimmy seems to be somewhat absent. Now, again, they've been mostly effective. He's getting to the line. He's efficient, rather, in his scoring. But he's also not taking enough chances. He's not taking enough shots. He's lacked aggression, especially early on, and you can tell that that's been eating away at him to some degree. I don't know, again, if he's possibly saving it for late in the game, knowing how evenly matched these teams are, and he's thinking that maybe he has to hold something in reserve for late game situations, but he hasn't shown up then either. I mean, to an extent, again, he's scoring a couple points here and there in game two win, maybe getting to the line in game one win, but in game three's loss, he was pretty much nowhere to be found, and I think that's a concern for the Heat.
He's taking two attempts per first quarter in this Eastern Conference Finals versus almost four, almost double that in the fourth quarter. Over the course of the playoffs, he's averaging 4.2 points per game in the first quarter versus 7.1 points per game in the fourth quarter. His first quarter scoring is behind Goran Dragic, which makes sense because he's one of Miami's leading scorers, but even behind Duncan Robinson. Yeah. And look, I understand that Miami in general, they want to get guys like Duncan Robinson going early, right? Because we know with Duncan Robinson, if he gets on a roll, that roll can last an entire game, if not for a whole half or something like that. And you really want to get him going early so that he doesn't disappear and becomes a non-factor. But I still think that there is room for Jimmy Butler to get started in the first quarter. And it just seems to me like he is kind of wearing this, like, hey, I can go out there and score 14 points and the Heat can still win thing, like a badge of honor. And I just don't know that that's the right way to go. And it's not like the opportunities aren't there, right? It's not like You know, he's just out there facilitating on the perimeter and just like kicking and keeping the ball moving. Like, he's giving up wide open layups at the rim, David, and he's just like kicking out to like Hero or Robinson or whoever. Again, I get it. You want to get your teammates involved and then you take over in the fourth quarter and all these things. But if it's a wide open layup at the rim, just make the layup, man. Just take the shot.
And he's been guarded by Kemba Walker and hasn't taken advantage of that mismatch. And, I mean, it's like you just don't want to go trucking over Kemba Walker despite how much bigger you are. But I think Jimmy's skilled enough as a ball handler and shot creator where he can make something happen. And if nothing else, he might draw a double team and free up a cutter like Bam or Crowder or somebody like that.
I look back to that game one of Milwaukee, and he scored 40 points in that game. That set the tone for the rest of the series, and I think that Jimmy Butler right now needs to have a game like that, specifically against the Celtics in Game 4. Like, this is the time for him to step up, because the Heat were up 2-0. They're now up just 2-1, but this could easily be 3-0 Boston, right? I think it could easily be 3-0 Miami, but it could also be 3-0 Boston.
Well, the Celtics have led for about 75% of each minute played during the first three games. So, I mean, it's been clearly they've been dominant. And Miami has just found a way to win in the key moments. They've made the right play and things of that sort. But overall, I think Boston has been pretty clearly better than Miami throughout the series.
It's fair to say the Heat stole those first two games. So I think when Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic, the leaders of this team, sit down and look at where they stand in this series, they got to think, like, hey, let's act like we're down 0-3 right now, because that's kind of how we've played, despite having won those first two games. And specifically, they need to look at Jimmy Butler and say, hey, we need more from you, man. Like, what? Like this fun, like, hey, 15 points thing, and we can win without you scoring a bunch of points isn't fun anymore. Like, stop being cute. Go be one of the best 10 players in the league and go out there and hang 30 points on this team, because you can do it. And if he's doing that, it's going to unlock everything else. I mean, it's going to unlock stuff for Dragic. It's going to unlock stuff for Bam. It's good, but he can't go out there and just be Jay Crowder. Like, he needs to go out there and be Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think, if anything, and I've heard this, I mean, maybe these are some conspiracy theories brewing amongst Heat Twitterati, but at the same time, the benching of Jimmy Butler might be just enough to kind of let him stew in that anger and have it boil over the next couple of days before Wednesday's Game 3 so that he can go in there as ultra intense and focused as possible. I don't think he really needs those kind of machinations to get him going. And it's kind of hard to tell. In today's presser, he was asked a lot, Spoelstra, Jay Crowder, they were all asked about whether or not we'd see a much more intense version of Jimmy Butler. And it's hard to tell because he's so focused. He's almost always laser focused on trying to find a way to win. So you never know whether or not you're going to get a better or worse version of him. But there absolutely needs to be a need for him to be a little bit better, just more aggressive, especially early on. And I think I like your point about, as much as you want to see Duncan go off and that kind of changes the tone for how opponents defend that team, the same thing can be said about Jimmy. I mean, a much more aggressive Jimmy early on does change things. If he's drawing double teams or getting to the line, again, even if it's the subtle thing of getting those extra calls early on, they can put a star player in foul trouble late in game situations or get them to foul out. That's crucial for Miami's success. I want to see a different version of him. And then I think that's a big part of it, too. I should say that in Game 3, Jimmy was particularly looking for foul calls that he's gotten throughout the season and throughout the bubble, and he was not getting those. So that might have taken a lot of the wind out of his sails, but he can't rely on those whistles. It's the playoffs. Every level, it gets harder to get that call as much as you'd like to have it happen. He still is able to get that shot falling over smaller defenders. He's skilled enough to get it even over a great defender like Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. I know they're making him work and they're being physical with him, and that's fine, but he needs to find a way to respond because he's getting paid that kind of money to do. He's able to do so more often than not. And while he's doing a lot of the little things outside of scoring, that's a big part of what makes him so effective.
They're being outscored in these first quarters by 10.5 points per 100 possessions in the playoffs, not just against the Celtics, in the playoffs. So this is not just a against Boston issue. This has been a problem with them for the entire postseason. They've just been so good in every other quarter. Why can't you just be that good in the first quarter? Especially, Jimmy, if you're like the coffee bean specialist of the bubble, shouldn't you be all like hopped up, ready to go for the start of these games? Like, just get moving. I don't understand. In the West, the Lakers have a 2-0 series lead over the Nuggets, but the Nuggets are no strangers to coming back and winning a series. We'll talk about how they could do that again next. The Clippers, Bucks, Rockets, and Sixers have all been eliminated and could all see very real changes this offseason. We'll talk about that later on. But first, David, let's look at the Lakers-Nuggets series. The Lakers are up 2-0. They have LeBron. They have Anthony Davis, who is apparently a clutch three-point shooter in the ilk of Kevin Durant. But these are not the Jazz, and they seem more poised and honestly, in these playoffs, more deep than the Clippers. So they seem to be flummoxing Nikola Jokic with, of all people, Dwight Howard. And I'm sorry to say this to Denver fans, and I've been as pro-Denver as anyone on this show, I think, but I just don't see the Nuggets coming back in this series.
It's hard to see it. I think the Lakers are clear favorites, that while the four remaining teams in the bubble all seem to have glaring weaknesses, I think the Lakers look much more dominant than any other team at this point. They have a much more well-rounded cast that seems to be stepping up in the right situations. They've got the two best players on their roster in Anthony Davis and LeBron James, so you have to give them the edge. But I think we're also kind of overlooking how much of an equalizer the Orlando bubble has been. And the fact that the Denver Nuggets have been able to stage these comebacks in their two prior series, I understand perhaps it's against lesser opponents. I think you can still give them that advantage. I think the fact is that they're still going to be able to find a way to make things evened out. Look, it's hard to predict what's going to happen in the bubble because the bubble is such a wild X factor. And at the same time, I think Denver has shown they have the kind of mettle where they can withstand being down in the series and still find a way to come up with a big play. And they've gotten such great performances from Jokic. I trust that Jokic is going to find some way to neutralize the impact that Howard has had on him. If it's anything, maybe he'll be a better playmaker and find other ways to get Jamal Murray going, although Murray looked good against the Lakers. I think they still have a chance of evening the series out. Maybe not sweeping or winning the next few games outright, but at least making it much more of a challenge for the Lakers to advance.
I don't see the Lakers necessarily sweeping this, but I don't see it for the Nuggets. I mean, the biggest thing to me is the fact that Nikola Jokic is no longer going up against Rudy Gobert, who is obviously a great defensive player, but just is a mismatch nightmare as far as him going up against Jokic.
Can I add something real quick? Sorry, I know you were going to say something, but I've just noticed over the last couple of days, especially with the Lakers winning games, I don't think there's a fan base that's more annoying than the Lakers fan base right now. I just have to say they are. I've never seen any group of fans be so wounded and looking for such an edge, like where there are no slights and making up narratives and storylines. It's like they're taking a cue from LeBron James and how the narratives have all taken away the MVP trophy from him when he clearly wasn't the best player, maybe even the best player on his own team, much less the best player in the league. I just think it's ridiculous. I just wanted to add that because I keep seeing Lakers players, they're whining incessantly. They're up 2-0. They're in the Western Conference Finals, and somehow they still find perceived slights to poke holes at and to fuel them on their Twitter rages. It's unbelievable.
I would love to join you in that, but I'm going to let that soak I'm just going to let that crash and burn in your mentions. Like that's all you.
Bring it, Lakers fans. I couldn't care less.
I'm not going to sit here and start taking the side of Lakers fans. I don't think they need anybody's sympathy.
Absolutely
over the years,
not.
But I
They're
do
still
just
looking
go
for
back
it anyway, though. That's for sure.
Back to this matchup, though. Like this. Rudy Gobert just couldn't guard Nikola Jokic on the perimeter. Montrezl Harrell and even Ivaka Zubac, he didn't have a chance against Jokic. But Anthony Davis, when he's playing center, is tailor-made to play him. I made the Kevin Durant joke earlier going into the segment, but that's what he looks like right now. I mean, he looks like thicker Kevin Durant. And if he's making clutch three-pointers like he is and shooting the way he has in this series, and he's doing it from the five spot, I don't know how the Nuggets can keep up because their greatest strength is being able to win that matchup with Jokic. And Jokic has been incredible throughout these playoffs, and he was incredible at the end of Game 2. He scored Denver's last 11 points, but Anthony Davis was right there scoring LA's last 10. And when you're able to match up that way, and then you also have LeBron James on your team, by the way, and then you've got Dwight Howard doing what he's doing against Jokic, which has been incredible when he's on the floor. Rajon Rondo, I mean, I think playoff Rondo, we talk about it all the time, but that's like what he is, and otherwise he is a ghost. Like there is no regular season Rondo anymore. Like you don't just like keep him in ice and then break it open for the playoffs. Like that's all you need from him. He's been incredible. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is shooting 60% from 3-point range on 5 attempts per game. The Lakers overall are shooting nearly 39% from 3-point range, and that was the big question going into these playoffs, or whether or not the Lakers 3-point shooters can get going. Well, guess what? They're going now. And when they're going like that and you've got LeBron and Anthony Davis controlling the middle of the floor, I don't know that this is not Nuggets specific, David. I just don't see any team beating them right now. They're the best team remaining if they're playing like this.
I mean, all good points. I think that kind of takes away from what Denver's been able to accomplish. And the reality is that the Clippers were a pretty good team. And I know that you had some legitimate concerns that proved correct regarding LA's lack of depth. But you look at the Los Angeles strengths up to this point, and it's been their depth. And maybe the Nuggets find a way to neutralize it in Game 3. And I think that's the expectation, is that they'll find a way. Jokic has been really good. I mean, I think a lot of people are talking about Howard flummoxing him. He still finished with 30 points in a loss in Game 2. So it's not like he's being neutralized completely. We're just not seeing not a 50-point outburst. And I think that's enough, you know, to this point, so that he can help carry.
Hollinger had our friend John Hollinger had a great observation on Twitter. Jamal Murray was plus 16 in 44 minutes, and somehow the Nuggets lost the other 4 minutes so badly that they didn't win. That's in reference to Game 2.
Yeah, I saw that.
This remains a Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic driven team, and unless those other guys get going, I don't see them having a chance. But then again, if those guys do get going around them, then they probably do have a chance. And look, there was a few nice moments from Michael Porter Jr. and stuff like that. But I think what Denver needs to do, and it's sort of just been the way they've come back in all these series, is just lean more heavily on Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic and just put pressure on the middle of opposing defenses. And I still have my doubts with whether or not they can win 4 of the next 6 that way against a middle of the defense that has Anthony Davis and LeBron when he's engaged, playing as well as he has. But that would be the path to them coming back in this series.
That's interesting. I mean, look, I'm thinking about this right now, and I know we're kind of talking specifically about the Western Conference, but you look at Boston in the East, and the fact that they were able to win that Game 3, that they've had this extended layoff in between Game 3s and 4, and you don't tend to think that they're out of it completely. In fact, I could see them pretty much going on there to knock Miami for the next 3 games,
sure,
and escaping the finals, or at least going into the finals. Why can't Denver make that same run? I don't know. I understand that the Lakers have some very, very, very good players. As I said before, the two best players left in the Orlando bubble. I still think that we're kind of taking away from what they've been able to accomplish up to this point. And I don't know that as good as the Lakers' depth has been, I don't know that that's necessarily sustainable, because it's been such a weak point for them all season long.
I guess I would just say to that, like Boston, like we just talked about, was actually the better team in these 3 games. And so
that's fair.
To see them go on and win is very realistic, where the Nuggets have played okay, but they've been outplayed by the Lakers. Like, they had to come back, and the Lakers gave up that lead, and I think we're sort of glossing over that in Game 2, but the Lakers were still the better team for most of Games 1 and 2, and I think they just are the better team, where if you took a straw poll of who was better between the Celtics and Heat, it could come back 50-50. Like, and maybe, if anything, more people would favor the Celtics, but When I thought that Denver could still come back and win that Utah series, which I said on the show, it was because I watched those games and the Jazz still never had an answer for the Jokic-Murray pick and roll. And if they just leaned into it more, I thought they would be able to win that series, and that's what they did. Against the Clippers, I just really doubted the depth and the way that that depth performed. The chemistry had not been there with the Lou Williams stuff and Paul George and everything that he's gone through in the bubble, not making light of it, but it's real, and it is affecting his performance on the court, no doubt, or it did. And I just looked at what they were doing, and I'm like, the Nuggets look deeper and just better right now than the Clippers did, and I thought that that series would go 7. I thought the Clippers would win, but I thought the series would go 7, and that's what they did, but the Nuggets won. But everything that we're seeing from the Lakers, not just in this series, but for the playoffs, is the chemistry is there. They seem together. They have the best players on the floor. I just don't see the same reasons why I bought the Nuggets in rounds 1 and 2. I'm not buying that stock right now. Maybe now is time to sell high on Nuggets stock. I don't know, but that's just where I'm at on here. But you're right. You know, maybe I'm wrong, and I shouldn't doubt the Nuggets because they've made it this far. And either way, regardless of whether or not they lose this series, this is a legit team with a few more tweaks are going to be at the top of the Western Conference for several more years and be contending for several more years because they're legit. We'll talk about what contender should blow it up this offseason next. But first, David, let's talk about Rock Auto.
Yeah, there's one thing you don't want to blow up, and that's your car, because you can always make the changes you need to fix it. And with an ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible to stock all the parts you might need in traditional chain storefront. So why endure pointless or intimidating questioning while the person behind a counter orders parts that you're looking for on their computer, choosing only the brand that their warehouse happens to carry? If you've got computers with access to rockauto.com and home and in your pocket, use them. Rockauto.com is a family-owned business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy-to-use site, and you'll get everything you need with just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. You don't have to deal with anybody behind the counter. You don't have to go to a chain store or a car dealership. Why would you want to spend more at those places when you can go to rockauto.com, get their low prices, which are the same for everybody? So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Then go to their How Did You Hear About Us section and enter Locked On so that they know we sent you. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com.
If you haven't already, now is a perfect time to hit that subscribe button to get episodes of Locked On NBA automatically in your feed every day. There are plenty of teams that underachieved this season, which could result in some very dramatic changes this offseason, which seems to be the norm in the NBA, so it would be wrong not to expect changes, especially dramatic changes. David, when you look across the league, what team most interests you as far as their offseason goes?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think you'd have to say right now it's probably two teams that were considered contenders prior to the start of the season or even prior to the start of the playoffs, and that's Milwaukee and the Clippers. I think both of them, having been this kind of high-end level team with a high ceiling, I think maybe they're just a change or two away. And yes, they both teams seem to get exposed during their playoff runs. But at the same time, maybe there's a tweak that you could make. Like, you've already heard that, of course, Milwaukee fans wanting to fire Mike Budenholzer, it seems less likely that that's going to happen because he's gotten the approval from ownership regarding his impact and whether or not Giannis Antetokounmpo agrees or not. It seems likely that they'll keep Bud there. As far as Doc Rivers is concerned, we haven't heard anything, I think, out of Los Angeles regarding whether or not he's going to get fired. But I think he's also likely earned the trust of ownership there. So it's going to be, regarding changes in the roster, we're hearing possibilities of trading away Paul George that seem very unlikely. Do you add a piece here and there? Do you sign a bench player to help shore up some of that depth that you have long had a problem with? And in Milwaukee, maybe Antetokounmpo finally says enough is enough. Look, he seems like he has the buy-in. He's bought in rather to the roster and the changes that are there. But maybe that's not the case. I mean, despite having won a second MVP trophy, he doesn't really have anything to show for it as far as playoff success is concerned. Maybe it's time to chase greener pastures elsewhere.
Yeah, the Milwaukee thing is interesting to me because we've read reports now that Budenholzer is safe, that they are not going to actually chase Chris Paul, who might be the most gettable guy for them, who fits exactly what they need as far as a playmaker who can, you know, absolutely score from mid-range and from the perimeter and all these things. And if you're not doing that, what are you doing? I don't really know if you're Milwaukee, what you're just going to run this thing back and just hope that it turns out to better, you know, that Budenholzer makes the right adjustments in the playoffs is something that he's never really done throughout his career. That Giannis, like, all of a sudden becomes a three-point shooter. Like, I don't know what the idea behind Milwaukee is. And so I've actually lost interest in the Bucks. Like, if it just seems like they're going to run it back, then that's not interesting to me anymore.
That's fair.
To me, the Clippers are really intriguing because they're in a position. I know it's just year one, but this is not what happened in 2011 with Miami, because those Heat teams still had LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh under contract for 4 years, right? 3 more years after that series against the Mavericks. This is it. This is contract year for Kawhi and Paul George. Like, if it doesn't work out with the Clippers, they could just say adios, we're done. And I look at this roster, and I still think it's deeply flawed. And you look at the teams that Kawhi has won on before, and not the teams that Paul George has won on before, because Paul George hasn't won before. So you look at the Raptors and that Spurs team, those Spurs teams. They were not only well coached, and I think we're overreacting to Doc Rivers. I think he's a great coach, and he's shown that historically. So I don't have that many issues with him. The 3-1 lead thing is problematic, but it's not a fireable offense right now. Specifically that Toronto team, also just had a lot of guys who could make plays for Kawhi. And that is something that Kawhi, I think, if you're looking for a weak spot in his game, it's just he's not the best playmaker. He's not even at the forward spot LeBron James level. He's closer to Paul George level as a playmaker. And both of those guys have taken steps in that part of their games, but they're not natural facilitators, right? They're not natural passers the way that LeBron James is and these other guys and these other top players. Even a guy like James Harden, like, they're not that level of facilitator. And I think with when you're building around Kawhi, you just need guys who can make plays for him so that he can go out and score the ball, so that he can go out and be this menacing defensive player. That's what he needs to do. And he could do both of those things maybe better than anybody else in the league on a consistent basis when he's able to focus on those things. But when you turn him into a playmaker and you ask him to do all this ball handling and all this other stuff, then you see him, you see the returns dip in those other places. And so who's the Kyle Lowry on this team? Who's the Tony Parker slash Manu Ginobili slash Patty Mills on this team? Like, who are the guys that can do that for him? Who's the Marc Gasol on this team? You know, even the center spot, you're not really getting playmaking. Like, in Toronto, you had Pascal Siakam, who was able to do a little bit of drive and kicking. Like, you know, Marcus Morris doesn't do that kind of stuff. So I'm really interested to see what the Clippers do this offseason, because it seems to me that they really need that kind of player. And that, I've said this all along, Paul George doesn't complement Kawhi Leonard even a little bit. Like, he's similar to Kawhi Leonard, and he's a good player to have. Like, he's a 3-and-D type player of the highest order. But it doesn't complement, make Kawhi's game better at any in any way. I think they need to go find that player, and I don't know that player is available. Do you take the temperature on Kyle Lowry and see if Toronto's willing to move off of him and just say, you know what, let's bring the gang back together with that duo, or do you look in another direction? I don't really know what the answer is, but that to me is really interesting. Is if the Clippers decide to get real and build this thing around Kawhi the way that they ought to, there could be a lot of changes there.
Yeah, I mean, all very well said. And I also like, now that we're having this conversation, and I think a lot of people are, especially when it comes to talk about leadership and things like that, and maybe that's being boiled down to overly simplistic terms and ways of looking at things, but I think more than anything else, it's probably more of an indictment on roster building, that it's not just about the accumulation of quote-unquote talented players, but it has to be a well-rounded cast, has to be, players and people that fit well together and that understand their role on those teams. I mean, I know it probably sounds somewhat homerish coming from somebody who covers the Heat, but the addition of Jimmy Butler has transformed that team from one that didn't make the playoffs last year to a potential finals candidate. And I think that has to do with the fact that, yes, Butler has been very, very good, but everybody else on their roster has understood their place on that roster much more effectively. And as a result, they're playing as well as anybody has throughout the course of the season. So when you look at the Clippers, and it's not just about, well, you've got great talent on the bench, you've got great talent as far as leading the team, et cetera. It's about fit more than anything else. Hell, you can even say to the Lakers, despite the fact that they have the two very, very talented players, everybody else on that roster seems to understand where their place is and that they're getting some good performances.
Well, that's because of LeBron James, right? Like, yeah. That's because of LeBron, and LeBron has always been a culture setter, right? You can agree or disagree with his tactics, but you can't disagree. He has always set some sort of standard and tone with his teams that, hey, I'm going to do everything, and then you're going to stand on the perimeter, and I'm going to get you the ball, and you better make that three-pointer. And if you don't, you're out of here. And if you don't buy in, then you go the way of Dion Waiters, right? And Kawhi is not that guy. And Patrick Beverley, they always say, is the heart and soul of that team. And that could be true, but he's not really a point guard, right? Like, he's a 3-and-D type player. He's a point guard by name only. Lou Williams is the same way. He's a scorer. He's not a playmaker, unless you consider throwing a lob to Montrezl Harrell, like, every once in a while as a playmaker, which I don't.
Boom.
Like,
yeah.
You need to, I think, fix that specific position for them, but also, you know, who's the guy that's going to set the tone there? And we've heard rumors and rumblings out of LA for all season that, you know, the locker room wasn't the healthiest. It didn't have the best culture. They weren't totally in love with each other the way that a team like the Heat is. I'm kind of wondering, like, Kawhi texted Jimmy Butler. He reached out to Jimmy Butler this offseason, in addition to guys like Kevin Durant and Paul George. What if Jimmy Butler signed with the Clippers and joined Kawhi there? Like, would things be different there? Would Jimmy Butler sort of be the culture tone setter there in LA? And if so, would that have changed things for them?
I think it would have. Yeah, I do think. I think it would have changed things. I think I think Jimmy's much more comfortable in that role, being not just the best player on the team. He would have been with playing alongside Kawhi, but he would have allowed Kawhi to just go out there and play basketball, which I think is something where he's much more effective. And I think that's what we saw last year in Toronto, is that Kyle was the emotional leader of the team. He was very solid and had some great performances in the playoffs, but overall he was the one carrying them aloft verbally, emotionally, you know, doing little things here and there that allowed Kawhi to shine as the best player, as the most productive player. So I think that would have worked a lot better in Los Angeles. And look, I mean, this is going back a few years where Paul George has said he didn't feel comfortable in that leadership role. And I know that a lot of people wanted to take that and run with it and kind of, you know, blame him for a lot of the Pacers' failures many years ago. But I think we're constantly seeing Paul George put it in this role where he's just not comfortable in. Somebody needs to step up in that place. And so you're going to have to make some changes. So we've been talking about those two teams, Milwaukee and Los Angeles, but is there another team that you find interesting? Because I'll tell you one team I don't find interesting is the Houston Rockets. And I don't know if you don't want to go in that route, but we're looking at potential changes, star-level players, teams that may have fallen short of expectations. And I'm at a point now where I just don't know what's next for the Rockets to.
No, that's the thing, is they're more of a rearranging the deck chairs type thing. They stopped being interesting to me when the Russell Westbrook thing didn't work out. Sort of interested last year when they swapped Chris Paul for Westbrook.
Right.
I'm least interested in now and seeing how they rearrange those things. Like, I guess what would be interesting now is this new coach comes in, decides he doesn't want to play, you know, basketball, basically, and actually like brings in a center or some sort of front court partner for James Harden. I suppose that would be interesting, but it's not like they're going to go out and get their Anthony Davis. Like, they have no cap space, no real means of making any moves, so they're not that interesting to me. The Sixers, I guess, are interesting, but we talked about that before, too. And I'm not sure anything's going to happen right now. It seems like something would more likely happen at the trade deadline or maybe next season after the new coach gets a whirl. But before we get out of here, David, I wanted to ask you, what is something new that you've discovered this year that you like, maybe even during the quarantine, something that you've found that you just either like and you didn't know you liked, or just appreciate a little bit more than you thought? Could be food, a book, music, an activity, anything.
Wow. You know, I this is a tough question. I was telling you before, when you sprang this on me all of a sudden before we were set to record, and you said, oh, you've got plenty of time during the show to think of something. And I'm thinking about this, and honestly, I don't know if I can impose enough on how difficult it is to find quote-unquote new things to do, especially when you have a toddler and in the midst of a quarantine. It's not like you've got a lot of free time to go exploring new activities, new interests, and things of that sort. And even, of course, new foods or things like that, because it's not like I'm going anywhere. I probably am one of the last few people that have not been to a restaurant in the past 6 months, but that's a whole other
conversation. What's something that your toddler then has discovered he likes?
Oh, well, that's that changes every day. See, that conversely is he doesn't care if there's a quarantine. He's learning how to walk, how to talk, how to do all these things, and every day is a new activity for him. But look, I will say, maybe it's kind of boring. I like cartoons, and one cartoon I've been watching a lot of lately is Adventure Time on Cartoon Network. It's available through my Hulu subscription. I've been really getting into it. I'm very much enjoying it. Actually bought some Adventure Time comic books as well, and I've been enjoying those. So I'm getting into the whole stories regarding that. And actually, I've finished almost the whole series minus the last episode, and I'm postponing it because I don't want to get too emotional about it.
Wow. See, that's actually something. See, you just needed some time to think about it.
There you go.
My thing is the Nike Health app. It's been
Okay.
I love it because, and we're accepting sponsors, but I love it because it's I could just do everything from my home, and I no longer have to go to the gym. And I am pretty sure, even when all of this clears up, David, I am never going back to another gym again. The idea of going to the gym and going to the gym already grossed me out before this pandemic.
Good point.
And so to go in there after and touch lay on these sweaty benches and touch these dumbbells that have been there for like 25 years, and everybody's just sweating and coughing and breathing heavy and all this stuff. I'm like, I don't think I could ever fully function in a gym ever again, like comfortably, you know? And so I'm pretty sure I'm done with gyms. I'm gonna be an indoor workout person. I always only went to gyms because I felt like I couldn't get a good workout in the house, because it was just so much easier to just sit on the couch and watch TV or do anything else. But I have learned to pick up that habit and just and do and look, I can't get a great workout in. I do like 20, 25 minutes of stuff, but I just keep moving for 20 minutes, and that app has been really helpful with that. And so this my answer is actually more of something I have discovered I really dislike in a physical brick and mortar gym. And it could, and like the Nike Health app is just sort of the avatar of my hatred of the brick and mortar gym. I'm done with gyms.
Excellent. All right. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not sure, like, the health app, do you don't have access to the kind of equipment that you would at a gym, though. Like, isn't there still a need for you to go to the gym so that you can
you just order all that stuff online. Like, I just got, like, a bunch of workout bands, and I got a couple of, like, medicine balls and stuff, and then, and whatever. And so I've got that. I got an exercise ball and a mat. And look, I can't, like, you're right, I can't do like a bench press or squats or like, you know, weighted squats or anything like that, but I didn't really like doing that stuff in the first place anyway. There now it's go. More of an excuse not to lift really heavy things. All right. Remember to listen to and subscribe to Locked On NBA on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you have some time, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe.
Love you, Lakers fans.